Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the recession may be officially over, but that doesn't mean that everything has improved. As we've done for the past year, we will continue talking about your uncommon economic indicators and offering listener-to-listener advice on how to manage in this economy. Right now, let's look at one indicator, H-1B visas, the program that feeds highly skilled technology workers to American companies. Some of those slots are going unclaimed for the first time since 2003. What is this program, if you're not familiar with it? What does it mean that some of the slots are going unclaimed? With us to talk about it are Vivek Wadhwa, a fellow with the Labor and Work Life Program at the Harvard Law School and a visiting scholar at the University of California at Berkeley, and Peter Goodman, national economics writer for the New York Times and author of Past Due, The End of Easy Money and the Renewal of the American Economy. Vivek and Peter, welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Vivek, define for our listeners who may have heard the term but don't really know what it is, what an H-1B visa is.
An H-1B is a temporary visa that allows you to work in the United States typically for up to 6 years.
And what is the quota, Peter?
The quota is the number of visas that are open to people who want to come here and work.
And I think it's 65,000, isn't it? All of which were snapped up in 2008 in a single day. So what's happening this year?
Well, I've been researching this, Brian, and there are multiple factors at play over here. First of all, the economies of countries like India and China are booming right now. There are more opportunities for graduate students from our universities in those countries than there are in the United States. At the same time, the xenophobia in the United States is building, that we've had so many tirades against foreign workers and H-1Bs that companies are reluctant to hire. In fact, some companies can't hire. For example, Bank of America and all the TARP recipients are legally obliged not to hire foreign workers. So the result is that, for example, my students at Duke University who graduate from the master's program, they can't get interviews, even though companies need their skills and their talent, and these are the best of the best. They can't even get job interviews.
What was in the TARP and what was in the stimulus bill, Vivek?
The TARP had legislation, basically, which required that companies hire Americans first. In fact, I think it actually barred the TARP recipients from hiring foreign workers. So Bank of America, for example, had made job offers to 50 MBAs, foreign national MBAs. They had to rescind them. And this made front page news in many countries of the world.
They actually had to rescind job offers that were made because of the nationality of the applicants.
Yes. It's not about what you know. It's about when you came to the United States.
So, Peter, how much xenophobia, how much companies not being interested or just not having the job openings?
Well, I mean, I think as Vivek says, there's a feeling in the rest of the world that the United States just isn't as much, you know, where the action is as it was before. I mean, the rest of the world has been told by our Treasury, by the World Bank, by the IMF, that, you know, our model is the model. It's the way to run your economy to maximize benefits for everyone. And given our crisis, given the feeling that we haven't regulated our financial system in a responsible way, and that we've run short of jobs for our own people, the basic bargain of middle-class life for so many Americans has so clearly broken down, there's a sense in the rest of the world that, you know, as Vivek is saying, if you're in China or you're in India or you're in Brazil and there are opportunities at home now, that may look more attractive than to come to the United States.
Are there Americans to fill these slots, Peter?
Well, you know, there are definitely skill shortages throughout our economy. I mean, it's a very strange paradox. On the one hand, there are clearly not enough jobs for people who need jobs and want jobs. And in fact, I mean, in the most recent data, we've seen that job seekers now outnumber available jobs by something like a 6-to-1 ratio, which is the highest ratio on record. On the other hand, we have not done a good enough job in terms of preparing people for the careers that are are out there. So there's a real disconnect between skills and need for skills, and there are places, particularly in manufacturing, high innovation manufacturing, where companies say they simply cannot find people to fill jobs.
Vivek, hang on one second. Anybody listening right now come to this country on an H-1B visa and want to call in, or do you have a family member or a friend in your country of origin who wants to come to the U.S. but can't find an employer to sponsor them with their H-1B applicable skills, call in and let us know. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or employers, how are you changing your relationship with H-1B visa applicants, either due to market forces or political forces? 212-433-9692, or post your comment or your question to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Vivek, an article in the Wall Street Journal last week had this kind of amazing fact. It said H-1B visa holders accounted for 35% of Microsoft's patent applications last year. Yep. How should we view that stat?
Well, it's even more scary. If you look at Qualcomm, 80% of their patents had foreign national co-authors on them. So what it says is that the best and the brightest from the world are coming here. They're helping us become more competitive. And that's what the problem is right now, that we're now not bringing this new generation of talent to the United States.
And Peter, anything different on that? And what about Silicon Valley in particular? How are they doing in the downturn?
Well, I think that the statistic that you just laid out there, I mean, if we talk about Microsoft and Qualcomm, speaks to the fact that our educational system, going all the way back to primary level, but then also looking at community college programs that could be training, laid off manufacturing workers for new jobs and things like renewable energy, biotech, Silicon Valley, we just aren't preparing our people for the jobs that are out there in a now global marketplace.
Roger in Ridgefield. You're on WNYC. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm a former H-1 visa holder who went through the whole system, green card next, and then now I'm a citizen. I heard Peter's response about H-1 visas and the thing about quota. The quota is not only about the number of visas the issue, but it's also about which country you come from. There are quotas by country. So, for example, when I was applying, my immigration lawyer, who was one of the best in Washington, said to me, "You're Brit?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You don't have any relatives in Sweden or Denmark?" I said, "No." "Why?" "Well, the queue's much shorter if you come from Scandinavia."
Interesting. Roger, thank you. And I think Marcelo in Clinton Hill might have had that experience from somewhere else. Hi, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I got hired on an H-1B in 2005 at an ad agency here in New York. And essentially, I was interviewed for the job in October. In December. I got the offer in January, but it could only apply in April, so I could only start working next October. And it cost $10,000, and at the time, there was more demand than available H-1Bs. So what company would be crazy enough to want to go through all this, pay $10,000, not even know that they're going to get a successful application and wait a year?
Right, they can say, because the company usually pays that money. Where did you come from?
Brazil.
So some listeners may be thinking, well, what skills did you have that were so unique to you coming here from Brazil that they couldn't have found an American with the skills to do this job at an ad agency?
Particularly in advertising creative, I think having an international background, they have different kinds of insights. So you have a more unique point of view to use in the creative department. And I think it's not just being from Brazil, but being from anywhere where most people around don't come from gives you a unique insight.
Thank you for your call and good luck. And Scott in Murray Hill, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I mean, I work for a big outsourcing company, and I've worked doing IT work for almost about 20 years now. And I mean, the truth is that, you know, majority of the reason you use people from other places, they're cheaper. You know, that's always been the case. And just like you buy goods from other countries, it's really no different. I will say this, that demand is down and will be down for probably a long time because we overspent on IT for the last 15 years. And I just don't see, you know, I mean, companies spent trillions of dollars in our economy and, you know, through the tech bubble, through post 9/11. And, you know, we've kind of, you know, exercised all the IT spend that we're probably, that we need, you know, fundamentally in our economy. And so you're not going to have a lot of, you know, you're probably going to have cross-border use of IT now and also labor. So you're going to see Indians going to South Africa and other parts of the world.
I hear you, Scott. Thank you. We're going to get one more in here and get some closing remarks from our guests. Lana in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Thank you. I spent 13 years working for IBM, and I agree with the person who was just speaking that IBM took people from other countries because they were cheaper. I'm now no longer working for IBM because a lot of the project manager jobs were either filled by people from overseas or were sent overseas.
So you think that's what a lot of the H-1B was really used for by IBM, just to get people with the same skills as Americans would have had but who are willing to work for less?
Absolutely.
Thank you for your call. Vivek Wadhwa from Harvard and Berkeley, how much do you disagree?
Well, you know, IBM gets two-thirds of its revenue from overseas right now. So why shouldn't IBM have two-thirds of its staff overseas or have, you know, people serving foreign markets? That's one thing we tend to forget in this debate. HP gets 70% of its revenue from overseas. Caterpillar gets 63%. So if we start thinking such a protection...
Oops, did we lose you? Are you there, Vivek?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi, David Gibson here.
Okay, I don't know. Oh, we lost... I'm sorry. We have David Gibson from the following segment on the air right now. So let's see if we can get Vivek Wadhwa back. Vivek, are you still there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we lost you in mid-answer there. But are you arguing that because American companies sell overseas that we therefore have to hire workers from those countries?
We have to understand those markets. We have to compete globally. We're developing, you know, products for foreign markets. So we need to bring the skilled talent in. And also these people make us more competitive. Having, you know, more bright people competing with our people makes us better. That's what's made the America what it is. That there have been waves of immigrants coming here every generation and competing with the ones before them. And this is why we are the world's only superpower. This is what makes America the great country it is.
And Peter Goodman, a last word, author of Past Due, The End of Easy Money and the Renewal of the American Economy. Do you see the H-1B visa program and its dip right now as an indication of long-term renewal beginning?
I think that's healthy. I mean, I think for too long we've been inclined to see globalization as a kind of synonym for Americanization. We go take a vacation in Paris and there's McDonald's on the Champs-Élysées. I mean, it's much bigger than that. Money's going to come into our country. Skills are going to come into our country at the same time that we're investing abroad. And in fact, we have to embrace foreign investment in the United States rather than impede it as a way to help us renew the economy instead of simply depending upon foreigners buying up our treasury bills and allowing us to spend beyond our means. And, you know, foreigners at any point could sell those holdings with the click of a computer mouse. It's much harder for foreign companies to sell factories in the Rust Belt, to sell new ventures set up in Silicon Valley. And embracing foreign workers is part of that process.
Peter Goodman and Vivek Wadhwa, thank you very much for coming on today and talking about...
Thank you.
The decline in H-1B visas, some of those slots still going wanting. If any of you listeners want to try to apply for them or get a company to sponsor you in 2009. And coming up in a minute, we will actually talk to David Gibson, who got on the line there by accident, about the Pope going after Episcopalians dissatisfied with things like women in the priesthood in their denomination. We'll do the religious politics and even ask what Islam has to do with it. Stay with us.